Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh-Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
Welcome back as we continue our interview with writer and artist Alice Cavanaugh-Scober. Which kind of leads me to Naked in Wonderland, my series of artwork and poetry books. You know, because what they are, they're my original artwork, some images, and then some of my original poems. So that's what my my series is. And having just come out with this COVID-19 one is kind of a different thing, but it's been fun.
That's a beautiful segue into my next question.
Oh,
so I'm going to repeat the title again for the listeners because I think it's a fascinating title. Naked in Wonderland, Volume 4, The First 404 Days, Poetry and Art in the Time of COVID-19. So first, tell us about how you came up with this fascinating title, Naked in Wonderland.
Okay, well, I have my other books here. Let me grab them because I want to check the publication date on the first one, because I'm not sure if I can remember even when I did the first one. Doesn't have a date. Oh no, no date. How can that be? Well, I don't even remember. This was my first one. It's kind of shiny. And I had this theory that I was always going to have a photo of the moon somehow on the front because I love the moon. Naked in Wonderland, the volume one would have been, boy, that would have been a long time ago. Why do I don't have the date on there? That was back in the day when I didn't know to put dates on things, I guess. But that was the first one. And this would have probably been late 2000s, early 2010s, probably, that I did this book. And basically, this one captures things that I had written over my entire adult life. This was just, you know, putting poems in that I thought were good enough to share with my family and everything. And two things, you know, I immediately knew I was just going to do them in chronological old order. I was always going to just do my poems oldest to newest in every book. And I envisioned a series. That's why I put volume one in great big letters on the cover of this one. Naked in Wonderland is from this little poem that I wrote. I don't know when I wrote it, but it was kind of like, well, actually, I do know when I wrote it because this says 01 January 2005. In this first volume, I actually put the dates I wrote the poems. Who knew? I haven't looked inside this book in a while. But this is, okay, so 2005-ish must have been when I did this book, and because I wrote this poem for this book, I was trying to, in a very short way, express what it feels like to put your innermost thoughts out there. Mm-hmm. And you know me, name Alice, spelled differently, but I love Alice in Wonderland. I love all things Alice in Wonderland. And so this is, you know, the poem that I wrote, Naked in Wonderland. Naked, I pass through, like Alice in Wonderland, a mirror of life. Because these poems and things are a mirror. You know, it's like looking in the mirror, and yet it reflects out, back, forth. It's, again, that give and take. And so that's why I named the series Naked in Wonderland. But I will be honest with you and say that back in 2005, being novice, you know, kind of on the internet kind of stuff, and I thought if I put the word naked in my title, it might get people's attention. I can't say that it boosted sales because, you know, but I was trying to be savvy, you know.
Well, I think it does get people's attention, but maybe
for the
not
wrong
the way
reasons.
You're thinking.
I know. It was afterwards. I was like, I'm not sure if I should have done that, but that was part of my thinking. I have to be honest. I was like, what's a title attention grabber? You know?
Right. Right. But no, I relate to that feeling of, yeah, it is a naked feeling to put yourself out there as an artist. I have a poem where I refer to that as being a naked feeling. Yeah. So I think that's very relatable for anyone who creates.
And in the first volume, there's only one or two images. I was not yet in a place where images, I had built up a bunch of images that I was willing to share. There's one or two photos in there that literally the poem was inspired by that photo, photos I had taken or something like that. So there's just very few images in that one. And then volume two came out in 2015. So it took me a while to continue writing. And this one is the first one that I included images in, but this is the first poem on that page. And this is, they're all black and white. Because with the hardback, the way I was self-publishing, the only option that I could afford was black and white images. So I was taking paintings. By then I had built up, I mean, that's 10 years later. I had built up a lot of artwork, paintings, and photography, but I had to turn those into black and whites. And so playing in Photoshop with taking a color image of a painting that I had painted and making that look good in black and white, that was, this is all learning stuff for me. That's why it took 10 years to get volume two out. And in 2015, my father had passed away in 2014. So that book includes a lot of what I call my grieving poetry and writings that had to do with going through that and everything. So, and then volume three came out, I want to say, in just a couple years ago. Let me see if I bothered to put 2020, August of 2020. And this is the first time I changed the cover to be something not black and white, not with a moon. This is one of my paintings, a detail of one of my paintings. And it has a lot of color imagery in it, paintings and things. So this is when I started getting more serious about breaking up the poetry with more artwork and everything. Mm-hmm. So, but unfortunately, sadly, 2020, my mom passed away in 2017. So this is the book that has, you know, even more, you know, kind of thought, I would say thoughtful and grieving, but thoughtful poetry about losses and things like that in life. Because when my mother passed away, that 3 years after my dad passed away, that kind of brought back his loss, you know, in a way too. So it was a tumultuous time, you know, but also my grandson was born in 2019, our first grandchild, my darling little Pally. And so there's some happy poems in there too. So that was that, but August of 2020 was before COVID-19. And so, you know, in that summer, I had already started thinking about volume four, but I hadn't actually written anything for it. I know that sounds odd, but if you and I think back to what we were trying to do in the fall of 2020, we were in transition mode doing a lot of, I mean, we were working pretty hard on having community education arts go all digital because we lost our physical venue. You know, we were so busy with community education arts that I just wasn't doing anything for, you know, personal artwork kind of stuff. So, and then, yeah, go ahead.
You're thinking of 2019, right?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, just clarifying. But yes, that was a tumultuous time indeed. It was a big transition.
Yeah, so I hadn't built up a lot of stuff that I wanted to put in past the 2020, August 2020 book. But anyway, so things were just so busy, you know, and getting that book published, it took me a while because of all that stuff we were doing with community education arts, it took the back burner. Because, you know, we publish the Pulitzer Review every year. That's a huge project. And our NICE project, although we don't really publish anything for it, it's a huge project behind the scenes, what we're doing with our recordings and everything about the books that we choose and all that. So I think I managed to put things for my own artwork on the back burner a little bit just because of stuff like that. Yeah.
So what makes volume four fit into the series as a whole and what sets it apart?
Well, what sets it apart obviously is the isolation of COVID-19. You know, and by isolation, I mean 100% for 404 days, I hadn't been around anybody except my husband. And even then in our house, living quite separate lives because he was going to work, masked, gloved, coming home, you know, disinfecting everything he touched, including himself, you know, showering, all that stuff. We stayed in, you know, we weren't in the kitchen at the same time. We sat on different couches in our big living rooms over 6 feet apart watching TV in the evenings. I mean, just really, I was very isolated. And as a person who's had lifelong disabilities, I'm very used to being alone. I'm very used to not being out in the world a lot because of my physical limitations. But this was even more so. I mean, this was very isolating, and in a way, just not being around my little family, my son, my daughter, her husband, my grandson. We Zoomed every day and all that stuff, but physically, we weren't really with them. And when we did see them in nice weather to go for walks or something, we were masked and gloved and separated. I would be walking in the street, they're walking on the sidewalk. I couldn't even hold my little pally's hand. Nothing. So the sense of doom also for someone with the health problems that I have, the pre-existing conditions. And as I mean, you can remember last year in 2020 in the spring, when the news of COVID-19 first started coming out, it wasn't there wasn't we know now that the administration and everything wasn't handling it well, but at the time it was just very, we just didn't know. It was sounded it, you know We knew it was terrible. We knew it was going to be deadly. We knew it was going to be something like nothing the world had ever seen before. And I'm lucky enough that I have a brother who's a doctor. Now he lives in California, so I don't get to see him, but he was keeping me informed of the dangers. And so I knew pretty early on that this was just going to be, if I survived it, I would be very lucky. If I got it, I mean, my doctors, my own doctors, and my brother flat out told me, if you get COVID-19, you will die. It will kill you. There's no way with your lung and heart problems that it won't. And so, what's different about this book is that it starts from a place of complete paralyzing terror. I don't know how else to describe it. I was so frightened. Once I realized how serious COVID-19 was for the world, and in particular for someone like me with pre-existing health problems, like the ones I have, I was just so scared because I didn't want to die. I didn't want to not see my grandson grow up. I didn't want to not see, if I have other grandchildren someday, who would they be? I'm gonna start crying. It was just terrifying, and I wanted to hug my daughter and my son, and I would just, it was just overwhelmingly terrifying, and I really was paralyzed. And so the first few poems in the book are kind of maudlin and like from a place of fear, which I've written from a place of fear before. You and I, we've talked about my first marriage and the violence and the abuse that was part of it and getting out of that. I mean, fear, you can't live a life of the kind of health problems I've had from such a young age and not know fear. I mean, I think I was 8 the first time a doctor, 7 or 8 the first time a doctor told me, with me in the room, my mom and I in the room, that I had 3 years to live. And I was just like, what the hell's that? What does that mean? What happens then? So that kind of paralyzing fear, I know that feeling. But this was different. This was like, I don't know, it was just different somehow. And so that kind of sets this volume apart from the previous three, because it truly is, all of the volumes are a journey, because again, everything's just in chronological order. Here are some poems, and so you could see how I change as a what I'm going through in my life, what I'm thinking about, whatever. But this was like, what is that old thing? This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. This is like my poetry. It's like the worser, the more extreme journey, if you will, of from fear to whatever you want to say it ends on, with a more of a hopefully a spirit of hope or something. Because 404 days, of isolation and waiting for that vaccine to be, when the vaccines finally were around, and then waiting to be eligible for one, and then getting the first shot, and then waiting for the second shot, and then getting 2 weeks after that, being able to hug Luke, my grandson. I still can't hug, hug my husband. I still can't hug my kids yet, because their vaccinations aren't full yet. They haven't got, one of them hasn't got the second shot yet, and the other, the Allie, my daughter, her second shot 2 weeks out from that will be next week. So that's gonna be a big hug day. So I had my hug day. My April 24th was the hug day, my 2 weeks out of vaccination, where I could hug Chris without masks and all that stuff, and because he's also fully vaccinated now. That's my husband, by the way. So, and that was the day I got to hug Luke, without, you know, fear, and hold his hand. And that was really special. So he's grown so much in a year. He's 2 years old now, you know? So, but anyway, I'm rambling. Cut me off whenever.
No, that was fascinating. I'm glad that you've told us about that journey.
Coming up, the next part of our interview with artist and writer Alice Cavanis Gober.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.